They are the forgotten heroes of the American South, the women whose back-breaking work helped build a nation. They were farmers. They plowed fields, chopped cotton, planted tobacco, all the while, and sometimes single-handedly, rearing 4, 6, even 10 children at a time. Some of the women have found voice in Mama Learned Us to Work, a compilation of personal histories by Lou Ann Jones. She joins us from member station WUNC in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Lou Ann, welcome.
Thank you very much.
These are remarkable stories of endurance, of bravery, invention. What stories stand out for you personally?
I think one of the most inspirational women that I met was a woman named Virgie St. John Redmond, who lived and still lives in Irondale County, North Carolina. And she's the woman who gave me the title for the book, Mama Learned Us to Work. When I went to interview her, it became very clear that why she wanted to talk to me was to pay homage to her mother, a very hardworking woman who had raised 4 children alone in the 1920s and the 1930s as a sharecropper.
And you brought us an excerpt of your interview with Virgie Redmond.
Yeah, in this particular excerpt, she's been married for a few years, and she and her husband first rented land, and she's talking about the first year that they had been able to buy, but that particular year, her husband, Mott, got sick.
This big field right here, see this big field?
Uh-huh.
I knew that if we didn't make a payment on that we'd lose it, so we had an old mule, and Mott's daddy had an old mule, and I told him, I said, I can get that mule from your daddy, and I can take my mule, and I can turn this field out here with a 2-horse plow. He said, Virgie, you can't do it. It's too hard on you. I said, I believe I can. And we turned that field, and we planted half of that field in cotton and half of it in corn, and we had enough out of the cotton to buy the kids some clothes and pay our payment. The first thing we done was to pay our payment on the place, because I was so proud of having a home, you know. Just so proud of it.
Happily, Virgie Redmond is still with us, but many of the women you talk to, Lou Ann, are not. Why women farmers, Lou Ann? Why did you decide to write this book?
Well, in part, I had grown up hearing stories about a part of the economy that I explore a lot in the book, and what I call the butter and egg trade, and this kind of casual trading that went on all the time. And I'd heard these stories from my mother. She would tell me about hucksters, traveling buyers who would come around to buy surplus chickens and eggs and other items that farm women had. When I started studying Southern history, I wasn't finding that in the history books. And I felt like that this was an important part of the farm economy.
As you mentioned, you are the daughter of a farm woman. What was life like for your mother?
Well, she was born in 1920 on a farm in northeastern North Carolina, and there was still no electricity when she was a kid, no indoor plumbing, no hot water.
But unlike the other ladies, she wouldn't let you record her.
Well, I actually recorded 1 hour of her 20 years ago now, and it was just clear to me that this was kind of an unnatural relationship with a tape recorder there between us. But over the years, as I, you know, was pursuing this research, as I would, I'd sort of need help, and I would ask her to write me what she remembered about the hucksters, or about raising chickens, or sewing with feed bags. And so I have those essays.
Can you share with us part of your mother's letters?
Well, I think one of the, I guess, more touching paragraphs in one of her letters, and she admitted to me that when she was a teenager, she did not see herself as being a farmer's wife, that this had been a hard childhood, or a childhood without conveniences that she knew was available not too far away in the towns and cities. And so here's part of a letter that she wrote me in 1982. When I was a teenager, there were not too many jobs open to women with just a high school education. Most girls went in nurses training or went to college to be teachers. A few took business courses and became secretaries. That was my ambition. I studied hard on my English and spelling in preparation for SAME. There was no typing taught in the schools at that time in the rural areas. I think I've told you the story of what happened that caused me not to finish the business course I started at home. In those days, you could rent a typewriter and do part of it as a correspondence course, then go to the school and finish it in as little as 10 weeks. When it came time for me to go to Norfolk for the finish, Mama had had a stroke, and I had to stay at home and perform her duties and care for her. By the time she was able to take care of things, I had lost all interest in continuing my education. The results were winding up falling in love with your dad and becoming a farmer's wife, which I have never regretted.
That's beautiful.
Thanks.
What did she pass on to you that you cherish most?
Well, I think that she told good stories. She passed away in 1991, just as I was completing the oral histories. And I really felt like that I had lost a colleague as well as a mother. And I think she was a pretty good writer, too, and that she set a pretty good model for that.
My grandmother was a farm woman, and she worked, she used to say, from can't to can't, from the time you can't see in the morning till the time you can't see at night.
Right.
But she was much more than that. That was not the sum total of who she was. And I'm wondering if, in doing this research, you found some misconceptions about farm women.
Yeah, I think that in some ways I was, am kind of writing a response to a pretty strong stereotype that we really, I think, bring with us from the images of the Farm Security Administration photographs, for example. I'm not saying that there weren't people who were desperately poor. There certainly were hundreds, thousands. But a lot of the women that I talked to were really women who came from a class of farmers who owned their own land, or they had draft animals and tools and that type of thing. But I do have to say that just the reality of their lives was that that they did have to work really hard. But I think we have to remember that for most of them, they really loved their work. I mean, they said work was my pleasure, and that they didn't see it as perhaps as oppressively as we might see it in retrospect.
In talking with the women farmers in your book, did you sense any bitterness or any sadness in being undervalued?
I certainly think probably some of them felt that, or that the money they made had to be used in ways that they didn't control. But I think when I did these interviews in the 1980s that for so many of these women, they were quite aware that they were members of a generation of farmers, women and men, who had seen enormous changes during their lifetimes. I mean, these are women and men who grew up with wood stoves, plowing with mules, and had grown old, you know, using microwaves and tractors and combines that had just grown to mammoth proportions. And sometimes oral historians have to convince people that their stories are worth telling and recording. And for many of these people, they knew exactly why I was there. They knew that those stories needed to be preserved, that their stories mattered.
It seems, too, that an unerring faith kept a lot of them going, like Lurleen Stokes Murray, for example. And you've brought a clip from your interview with her. Let's end with that. Tell me about Lurleen.
Yeah, Lurleen Stokes Murray was one of the first people I interviewed, and she grew up in Florence, around Florence, South Carolina. And one day we got to talking about miracles, and she told me the story of a surprisingly bountiful wheat harvest. And I always think of this story as sounding like a parable of the loaves and the fishes.
There's a 20 6/10 acres field right down there. Open, I mean. And Julian had planted that, and that's cultivated, that's the word. He had cultivated that, and it was planted in wheat in the fall. Well, about this time in January, he came in and he said, Mama, he said, our wheat is not good enough this year to spend money for top dressing. He said, I think I'm going out there and just ply it up and replant it. Well, I dropped my head a minute, and I said, son, I said, Mama's got to have stuff to feed her chickens, because I knew that was a little income. So he went ahead and he put top dressing on it. Well, honey, when the wet was weighed and the final analysis, it made 55
bushels per acre. We've never made it before or since.
So where do you think it came from?
One plants, one waters, but God give it the increase, and you can't outgive God.
We will leave Lurleen Stokes Murray with the final word. Luann,
oh, wow.
Thank you so much for being with us today.
Gosh, this was a lot of fun. Thank you.
The book is called Mama Learned Us to Work, Farm Women in the New South by Luann Jones.